For generations, Americans have chased the American dream. And once you're a parent, you want your child to live the American dream. You want your kids to go to a nice school, get a good job, buy a new house, even get to see trendy shows on Broadway, if that's what they want. And so, from the day your kids are born, you may begin to wonder what you can do to set your child up for financial success. According to Beth Kobliner, a financial expert and author of the book, Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not, the answer is to start young, like really young.
Research shows that by age 3, kids really understand some money basics. They understand that when you give money for something, you get something back. They understand exchange. They also understand value. And it's really important to start talking to kids at very young ages, 3, 4, 5, about wants versus needs. We want chocolate milk, but we need milk. So when we go to the store, we're going to buy mostly things we need. And sometimes we're also going to buy things we want. And making that distinction at a young age is a great way to get started.
Kobliner stresses that teaching your children about money is a process and that each child is different, but that there are some common guidelines she encourages all parents to follow.
Generally speaking, it's smart to, first of all, talk to girls as much as you talk to boys, because research shows that parents seem to be less likely to talk to daughters about investing topics, for example, than they are to talk to sons. So just knowing that, I think, is really important. You also want to not lie about how much money you have on you. If you're with your kids and they say, can we buy this? You're like, no, I don't have money. And then you turn around and buy a coffee with your credit card or your debit card. They see that and they know, and you're busted. It's better to be honest, say, nope, we're not buying that right now. That's something we'd love to have, but we don't have the money. We're not going to pay for it right now. That's not on our priority list right now. And explaining to kids rather than lying, I think, is really important.
Once a child understands value and the distinction between wants and needs, Kobliner says you can begin to teach them how to prioritize.
It's great to set a goal. And it's great to say, okay, this is the Pokemon you want or the sneakers you want, whatever it is, whether you give your kid allowance or they get a lot of money from grandparents, whatever it is, you want to have them save that money and talk about what they call opportunity cost. You don't have to use that term, but it's that basically if we're going to spend our money on snacks after school, then we're not going to be able to put that dollar into that jar that you're using to save up for that Pokemon. So starting to have concrete goals and save up money in a very understandable way is great.
And Kobliner says the opportunities to make your child feel a part of their own financial future continue to pile up as they get older.
When a kid turns 8 or 9 and maybe they have $50 or so, opening a bank savings account, making sure it's a bank that doesn't charge fees for very low balances, is very smart because it's a real way to concretize the idea, okay, I'm kind of really taking this seriously now and I'm saving in a place that will keep my money safe. When a kid gets a little older, you could help him transfer it to an online bank, so they'll probably get, 1% interest, a little bit more than you get in a regular bank. But just the experience of opening a bank account, I think, is really pivotal and key for kids. Something that my generation, most people fondly remember opening that first bank savings account, and that just doesn't happen as much anymore.
An important factor in the whole discussion, though, is how your child receives money. Do they get monthly spending money? Do they just get gifts around holidays and their birthdays? Or maybe you make them earn their own money. Kobliner says these tactics all have benefits and drawbacks, but ultimately it comes down to the lessons they're taught about handling that money.
I looked at more than 24 research studies on this and found that giving kids allowance is not the financial holy grail. You don't have to give kids allowance. I think parents get a little stuck on that. And they're like, oh, we started it and then we forgot and the kids forgot to ask us about it. But the important thing is, whatever you're giving, however your kid gets money, whether it's through grandparents or you give them from time to time, be clear on what you expect them to spend money on. So if you get them a pair of sneakers, but they want those designer sneakers, you're like, okay, that's on you. You'll have to save up for that. So be clear about what they're supposed to spend their money and be consistent. Don't go back on that when you feel kind of bad for them a few months later and, oh, they really want the sneakers. So be clear, be consistent.
There are some money-providing habits Kobliner says parents should avoid.
Don't tie allowance to chores. It's good to give kids chores, but research has shown that it's important to give them that responsibility so they feel like they're doing their chores as being part of a family, a team player, and not just getting money for it. So that feeling of being a team player and working responsibly to be a member of the family is one predictor of how likely someone is to go on to graduate from college or get a job even. So keeping chores separate from allowance is really critical.
Another money-providing habit Kobliner warns parents about is co-signing on a credit card for a high school or college-age child.
Parents sometimes think, well, they're young, I'm going to give them what they call an authorized credit card and let them use my credit card. Some parents, first of all, think they're helping their kids build up credit, and that may not be the case, depending upon what kind of card it is. But also, if the kid makes a mistake, that could have an impact on your credit score. And I've met many people along my book tour. I've been going to different cities and hearing stories of horror stories, really, of parents who said, oh, I gave my grown kid my credit card, co-signed it, and now I'm really facing my own financial problems and my credit score is damaged because of it. So I think talking about credit cards, even middle schoolers or elementary school kids, when you use this is like borrowing money. Now, when you borrow money, you have to pay it back with interest. So buying something like an iPad for $600, if you can't pay it all back, it might end up costing you, close to $1,000 when you add in the interest, and really making that a concrete point.
Kobliner recommends parents find a way to provide their college students with some spending money without securing them a credit card.
It's fine to say, okay, we're going to give you whatever it is. Is it $500 a semester, $200 a semester, whatever you feel is appropriate, and that's it. That's your money, and you give it to them. You can give it to them on a debit card because that will allow them, and it's a limited debit card. It's a prepaid debit card, and you can get some with lower fees. Or it can be a debit card attached to your account, but it should only have the specific amount of money in it and no overdraft protection or no way to tap into more money. And when it runs out, it runs out.
Teaching your child how to be money savvy can be a challenging chore at times, but implanting these skills early on can make all the difference as life becomes more complicated and the financial choices they make become more important. To find out more about Beth Kobliner and this topic, check out her book, Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You're Not, available online and in bookstores. You can also find links and additional resources at viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in March 2019 and was written by Evan Rook. Studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Oregon's Tillamook County Creamery Association produces dairy products you know and love. In fact, the farmer-owned co-op makes award-winning cheese and is now the fastest-growing family-size ice cream brand in the country. Its commitment to stewardship informs every decision the co-op makes, and it's getting noticed. The company was recognized by Fast Company as a World Changing Ideas Award Honorable Mention recipient. And in 2020, Tillamook achieved status as a certified B Corporation. There are plenty more good stewardship examples in their newly released Good is Something We Make Together stewardship report. Here's Paul Snyder, Executive Vice President of Stewardship at Tillamook County Creamery Association.
When COVID hit, our farmer owners stepped up with a $4 million relief fund to help support employees, nonprofits, and local businesses in the communities where we operate. And we've donated 10% of September profits to the Alpha Farmer Initiative to protect at-risk farmland and provide grants to up-and-coming farmers all over the country. We've also reduced water use, made advances in cow care, and joined the global fight against food waste.
The Tillamook County Creamery Association is owned by around 80 Oregon farming families and has been around for 112 years. Find out how they're a force for good in the world at tillamook.com/stewardship.
Cardiovascular or CV disease is the number one killer of adults in the U.S., and millions of people trying to reduce their risk of a heart attack or stroke may unknowingly be taking medications that are not proven, nor FDA approved to reduce cardiovascular risk. Let's hear from cardiologist Dr. John Osborne.
Many people are unaware that after a failed outcome study, the FDA revoked the approval of fenofibrates when added to statins, as the risk outweighed the benefits to heart health. It's important to remember that statins, along with diet and exercise, can lower cardiovascular risk by about 25 to 35%. But persistent cardiovascular risk, which can lead to a life-threatening event, may remain. I would tell anyone still being prescribed fenofibrates, such as Tricor and Trilipix, with a statin, to talk to their doctor about FDA-approved therapies for cardiovascular risk reduction.
To learn more and get clear on the facts, visit itscleartomenow.com. Again, that's itscleartomenow.com.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Viewpoints is a production of MediaTrax Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints. Coming up next week.
Teenagers are impulsive. They are unable to weigh risks and consequences as well as adults can. And they're uniquely pliable. They can grow, they can change, they can mature.
Is it ethical to sentence a teen to life in prison without parole? Then.
There are so many things that are present for you if you slow down, take your time, ask questions, say thank you.
The upside to traveling more consciously. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.